All right, a rainy Saturday day, rainy a Saturday morning at the WRMJ studios. I'm Jim Taylor. Good to have you along. Pleased to have Mercer County girls basketball coach Kate Engwall with us today. And it's hard to believe the basketball season's been over a couple months already, right?
Yeah, a couple months, 2 months now, yeah.
So now we're preparing for 2019, 2020. But I know you've been out and about with softball, watching the girls softball team play a few times, track meet. I know the Golden Eagle invite down at Pratt Memorial Field. A lot of multi-sport athletes out there participating.
Yeah, I think we have all but three in our program are multi-sport athletes, and most of them are in a spring sport. So I've been busy following them around, watching them compete on the track and on the field this spring.
You just completed your fifth year as head coach?
Fourth year. Will be my fifth, yeah.
So what I guess as you've followed here recently, I'm not talking about just basketball in general, but girls athletics in general, participation numbers, if you've been out, they steady, they declining, or does it vary from sport to sport?
So while I finished my fourth year, I did JV before that, eighth grade before that, and volunteered before that. So I've been around for 7 years, and in those 7 years, participation numbers, I think for girls sports are up, but more exciting than that is I think that the culture has started to change where there's a little more excitement now than there was 7 years ago, and I kind of think that we're getting close to like that tipping point where you know, the culture's there and the attendance is up and the buy-in's getting there. You know, now it's, can we push these girls to that next level and really see girls sports at Mercer County take that next step and really be competitive in the region?
Now, one of the things that we you know, our primary conversation today, I really wanted to highlight is, and I like the opportunity here of, especially at the young age, doing an all sports camp.
Mm-hmm.
So the backstory on that is what? Because it's basketball, softball, track,
and volleyball.
And volleyball. So
mm-hmm.
The backstory on that is basically one, working together as coaches. But what else comes into play in all this?
Right. Well, I think one of the big things is, you know, we target the youth kids specifically for those camps, and we don't all get the same kids. And so, volleyball might have a kid that would be good at basketball or like basketball, but they've never tried it, so they haven't had that exposure. So what we're hoping to do is, one, build excitement for Mercer County girls athletics as a whole, and work together in doing that, and then hopefully in that process we can get a lot of younger girls who wouldn't otherwise have exposure to the different sports, and take a couple days in June and give them exposure to those different sports, and they might find something new that they love.
So when is it? And the age group is for what?
Girls entering third through sixth grade in the fall of 2019. And then the camp will be June 26th through the 28th. And it'll run 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. those 3 days.
There's going to be some tired kids.
Yeah, they'll be tired, but it'll be a lot of fun. They'll get breaks. We're going to provide lunch for them, so it'll be a fun week. I always think the cool part is watching the youth kids interact with the high school kids.
So they'll serve as counselors in the
high school.
Yep,
they will. Kids. Yep, so it'll be a fun week, but yeah, we'll wear them out.
So it's based, is it based around then their intermediate school?
Yeah, yep, we're going to run this at the intermediate school.
All right. You know, the one thing I was thinking about is giving kids a taste of everything. Because one thing that concerns me a little bit about youth sports here, especially when we talk about youth club sports, and my oldest daughter was a youth club kid growing up. My middle daughter is not. My youngest daughter is not. But the overcoming, I guess, the obstacle or hurdle of that kid knowing, a kid that's not a club youth kid, all right, that hasn't played that level, then they're leery of wanting to do something, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They feel,
oh, yeah.
Am I ready to play? And I'm like, man, you're third grade.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know by the time you're a sophomore or a junior or a freshman. But I do worry in our culture today that some kids at that level already know that they're not playing at a youth or club level. They haven't tried the sport, so they don't know if they can compete at that level. And nine times out of ten, probably at that age, they probably can if they're just given the chance or they say they want to play. But because of them knowing that their friend or colleague plays for whoever, you know, travel, basketball, travel, baseball, or softball, whatever gender we're talking about, they'll say, well, I'm not going to play because they're already playing at a youth club level. So, I mean, do you see what I'm saying in terms of the potential of losing that kid because of that?
And that, you know, that's certainly something that we as coaches, we think of. And it's funny you bring that up because I was just having that conversation with someone the other day. You know, those youth club programs, the travel teams, like, they're really good, and I'm not going to knock them. I did that, too, when I was young. I played travel basketball. But you see that when you get into junior high is that there are kids who, for whatever reason, whether it be they didn't know if they were interested or never had the opportunity to give it a shot, or sometimes it's the family doesn't have the resources to put the kid into the travel ball, which is a real concern as well. But that affects their experience going forward because either they're going to be too intimidated to try or, you know, if they do decide to try it out, they may find that they're behind the eight ball a bit in terms of skill or just a general understanding, and then that affects their experience. So, yeah, it is an issue, and we're hoping that by trying to catch some of those younger kids and give them the opportunity to have that exposure, that we can avoid that issue once they get to that sixth, seventh grade level.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, you mentioned financial commitment and then time commitment, too.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the other thing at youth sports. If you're a parent or one parent or two parent home and your work schedule doesn't jive with a travel ball schedule, well, your kid probably can't play. I mean, it's just the way it works.
Right. And there's, you know, some of those travel teams, you know, some aren't bad. Some maybe through the three summer months might only play, you know, five weekends away. And then maybe those weekends are here. Maybe they're far enough to where a hotel is required. But some of those travel ball teams, and when I say this, I'm thinking more of like the ASA softball, but it's every weekend and they're traveling far. And yeah, and the kids, you know, I can say this, and it's changed since the time I was in school, but, like, I didn't appreciate the time commitment and the financial commitment that it was on my parents at that time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a concern and an issue.
Yeah, and then I know, you know, even club volleyball in this region has taken off at various levels. That's big. We know about, you know, whether you play AAU or travel basketball, and we well know about travel baseball and travel softball. Now, I know it doesn't impact you in the winter, but the dual participation that they've kind of unveiled the last 2 years, and we've had, I think, two kids this year taking advantage of it, because I interviewed Carly Steinman doing track and softball, and there's, I think there's another
Becca
kid.
Gray is also
yeah, that's
doing
right.
Track
so,
softball.
What do you, I mean, a little bit about the reaction of what you heard about that, and what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I think that it's working well, you know, and I think the spring sport coaches would have the toughest time with it just because those are outdoor sports and the weather's so unpredictable. But I think that those coaches have worked well to hash out a plan, and the communication has been there to where there's been no confusion, no concern, no questions for those kids about where they're supposed to be and when. And, you know, kind of like the conversation we just got done having, it gives the kids an opportunity to be involved in more than one program. You know, the only concern, like, for me is me personally as a coach, the concern is, you know, the quality. You know, like, if you're not at softball every single day, you might be a little more rusty and you might make some more mistakes than you otherwise would. So, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, how much is that really going to matter? I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, you have that individual, though, has to be all in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On both. I mean, you can't just say, well, yeah, I want to play softball. I think I want to do track. Or, yeah, I want to do track. I think I want to do softball.
Right. You have to be all in on both or it just won't work.
Yeah. All right. So I was thinking about the date for that camp again, entering third through sixth grade.
Through sixth grade, June 26th through the 28th.
You can go to mercerschools.org.
Yeah, the form is on the website. If you want to register your daughter, all you need to do is shoot a message to either the girls' basketball program or the girls' softball program, Facebook, Twitter. If you know us, you can text us. Just any way you can, get us your daughter's name, shirt size, and grade that they'll be entering into. We'll get them on the list, and then you don't need to turn the form in until day one of camp.
Yeah, so let's shoot for a big number. You guys have a goal the first year doing this or not?
We all know what we typically have at our individual camp, so we're shooting for at least that or then some. I personally, I'd love to see 50-plus girls sign up.
Now, are the sports still doing individual camps or not?
This is going to serve as our individual camp.
Cool,
and
man.
Then we're like, I communicated with my junior high staff that I want them to, because we're not including 7th and 8th grade in this, so they're going to take on doing their own junior high type camp.
Yeah, all right. So I know I wanted to talk about a lot of other stuff with you today. You know, this week, and really here as we wind down school years, we always have signing ceremonies at a lot of different places, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different schools have them, and for kids going on to play at the next level. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit because they're, you know, the commitment it takes to the next level, because you see a lot of these signing ceremonies at various schools, and then a year later or 2 years later, are you still playing? No, I'm not playing
mm-hmm.
anymore. You know, I'm not saying every kid, but I'm saying it appears to me, you know, one out of every two kids, basically, they're not playing after they commit to
mm-hmm.
go. You know, what? You played at Augie for 4 years after a stellar basketball career at Aledo back in the day. So I guess as kids sign today. Now, there are exceptions. I know that kids continue to go on and play. I'm thinking about Connor Sharp at Monmouth College right now. I'm thinking about Brian Heath that just wrapped up at Michigan Tech. Lucas Johnson plays at Wisconsin Platteville. Saw Gentry Whiteman at a high level just wrap up his second year down at John Wood. And, you know, my observation of not going to a lot of junior college stuff or a lot of Division III stuff. Well, I know that this year I went watched Illinois Wesleyan play a doubleheader with Augie in men's and women's basketball, and I'm like, wow, at both levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just what I'm used to, accustomed to seeing at 1A, 2A level, boys and girls basketball. And then watching Gentry Whiteman play JUCO at John Wood, I'm like, man, these dudes can play. So, you know, in terms of upping your game, and then you throw in, at those levels, academics supersedes athletics. Well, it should have, you know, high-level D1, too,
mm-hmm.
but, you know,
right.
The revenue-generating sports, that's the primary focus. So long story short, a little bit about your experience playing at Augustana College and doing it for 4 years and, you know, signing, playing. What was the biggest hurdle for you as an obstacle to make it to the finish line? I mean, did you ever question yourself?
Oh, absolutely. So it's interesting, you know.
And am I right? I'm not slamming kids that sign that they have a signing ceremony for, and they don't finish playing.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of things change in your life, and sometimes you say, "Well, I can't do athletics and academics at this next level. I'm going to school to go to school. I need a job
mm-hmm.
because we talk about." At those levels, you're not getting a full ride scholarship.
Right.
So you have to figure out how to pay, in addition
mm-hmm.
to going to school, to play and work.
Right.
And sometimes you just can't make those three work. And I think that's a lot of it where kids stop playing.
Yeah.
But so I guess the biggest obstacle, I just talk about commitment and that and all that.
Yeah, so
it work.
You're right. So at the Division III level, you know, you have to be recruited and asked to play at that level, but you're not receiving an athletic scholarship. You'll get, you know, academic scholarships. You can, you know, get some financial aid otherwise, but it is not an athletic scholarship. So I went to Augustana. That's, you know, I was recruited to play there. It's a Division III school in the area. But regardless of the division that you commit to play at, it's a full-time job, and the commitment level, like, you'll see kids at the high school level who are committed. Like, they're committed, you know, at the high school level. It is just a whole nother world once you get to college, and it doesn't matter the level that you choose to play at. So, and there is no off-season, too. Like, you move into Augie over Memorial Day weekend. Well, you start your preseason workouts that following Monday. So you'll have, you know, outside of the basketball season, you're in your preseason or your postseason. Mm-hmm. So you're working out, you know, a couple days, you know, probably 3 or 4 days a week. You're lifting for a couple hours or doing, you know, doing some other kind of workout for a couple hours. And then the remainder of the days you don't work out, you're just getting together and you're scrimmaging, playing pickup. Because you don't get, you know, my personal experience, I didn't get an athletic scholarship. I worked. I had 2 part-time jobs on campus. You know, and all the, you know, my experience was that that those campus jobs you have, they're willing to work with your schedule. But I worked probably, I'd say I worked 6 to 8 hours a week, 6 to 10 hours a week, maybe. And then you're in class probably 5+ hours a day. And then when you're in season, you've got your 2-hour practices every day or your road trips where you're driving up to Carthage, Wisconsin, which is 5 hours one way. But you're still expected to have your classwork done on time. You can't skimp out on your on-campus job if you want to keep it. And that's before you even consider the fact that you still need to eat and are going to want to have a social life because you're at college. So just the time commitment and your ability
to... Sounds like a fun time.
Yeah, your ability to multitask... and just, you know, keep your life organized. It doesn't compare to what you're required to do in high school.
Yeah, man. You're just telling all that. And then you said, I think, which is interesting, you're fortunate where you have a campus job.
Yes.
And they can understand and work around your schedule. But in real life, outside of 38th Street, 47th
right.
Street at Augustana College, if you're not on campus, they ain't going to work with your,
right.
your schedule,
yeah.
and you're limited to where you can work at.
Mm-hmm.
So then for you personally, your self-reflection when you're doing it, what was the lowest moment where you said, I don't want to do it, but you overcame that?
Right. So
and every kid will have that.
Oh yeah,
experience.
And it's going to be different for every kid too. And that for me is, you know, my personal experience was we went through a coaching change after my sophomore year. The coach I had my freshman and my sophomore year, he was released prior to the completion of my sophomore season, and there was just a lot of. You know, I didn't handle that particular for a variety of reasons. You know, I really struggled mentally during that season. And then you start to reflect on all the time, you know, blood, sweat and tears that really goes into it. And, you know, at that level, like I'm not going on to like there's no athletic, you know, future for me beyond whatever I, you know, however long I choose to stick it out at college. So, you know, you're reflecting on that. Is it worth it? Like. And I had that experience as well my sophomore year where I really didn't know, and I was getting to play. It wasn't that I wasn't getting to play. Had nothing to do with that, but, you know, just the mental anguish that you go through, because it's a grind. And then, you question, is it worth it? Like, am I doing it for the right reasons? And, you know, I stuck with it, and I came out on the other end, and, like, that's one of my proudest achievements because no one knows but me what it took to get through those 4 years. And our team wasn't even good. And that was, you know, that was, you know, some of the proudest experiences of my life was just what it took to stick it out.
Well, and then as far as the game is concerned of going from high school, small school level to even D3, because I think most people can see the D1 level and watch it on TV and be an expert, and maybe they haven't got out and watched a D3 game in person. You know, and I know, seeing D1, high-level D1 in person, I always tell people, to me, the difference, the real difference is, like, D1, high-level D1 basketball, at all, both men's and women's, it all seems to be north-south. It's get to the rim. You know, dribble the ball, drive to the rim, get fouled. Now, when I watch D3... It seems to be what I like. I mean, there's a little more fluid, like, movement where it's run through screens. And I was telling my brother-in-law, who's an official, I said, I think it would be hard to officiate D3 because they run through screens the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch that. And then even the, like watching D3 a couple times this year, and I even think at the high school level, how much more physical the game is becoming. So, like, the actual adjustment from playing, the hurdle a small school kid needs to overcome to play at the next level. Because even when I went to a JUCO game that Gentry Whiteman was playing in this year, I told him, I'm like, man, dude, you know, these dudes that you're playing against, I'm like, wow. You know, this ain't, you know, you ain't playing the Taylor Ridge no more. Mm-hmm. And Rock Ridge played a good schedule, you know, in boys basketball. But I'm like, man, that dude you play against. So what is the, in terms of, I guess the expectation is you playing in terms of maybe parents listening that have a kid that's thinking about playing at the next level. What was the biggest, like, adjustment or obstacle for you to overcome there, if you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I personally think... you know, because if you have any shred of common sense, you know there's going to be an adjustment, right? You know those college kids are going to be bigger, stronger, and faster than you are, but that's because they've been training at the college level and you have not yet. But like me personally, I think that the biggest hurdle to overcome, it's a mental one, because you're going to go, or your child is going to go from being the standout on their high school team, maybe the standout in their area, you know, to where maybe that second person on the depth chart at their high school team can't touch you just because you have that physical ability. But every single person that's going to be on your college team, like, that was their same experience too. So, like, you went from being the big dog on your high school team to now every single one of your college teammates was that big dog. So, I mean, you really have to have... you know, you can't just kind of like to compete. Like, you really have to have, like, a fire within you that wants to compete every single day, every single rep. You have to compete in the weight room, you know, like, getting there on time. Who's going to get there earliest to get those extra shots up? Like, everything has, you have to be willing to do that in order to just give yourself a chance to stay afloat. And I think that that's, like, the biggest, you know, obstacle to overcome is that, you know, your college experience, you have to be willing to know that that's what it's going to be and willing to fight through that and work for that if that's what you really want to do.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is, I mean, we're talking about the challenges, but in your heart and in your soul, you have to enjoy it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, so you enjoy playing the love of the game. And that's the first thing I tell anybody at any level, if it's junior high or high school, and you don't like it, mm-hmm. you know, better not play anymore, because if you don't love or you don't enjoy a game, you shouldn't play. And then especially at the college level, where you have to up it a few more notches. The bottom line is yes, you have to want it, but two, you have to remember.
If you don't love doing it, it's not going
to
be worth it.
Yeah, I love playing mm-hmm. Division III college basketball. Do I still love this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the only reason that I, you know, made it through 4 years, because at the end of the day, I really did love the game. I loved, you know, and the things that I loved about it was the game and competing and everything. But, like, I do love the things that sound cheesy to say, but, like, most of my lifelong friends were my teammates in college, and you do become family with those people. And some of the experiences and the heartache and the challenges that you go through together, no one could ever, you know, I can't tell you what that was like, mm-hmm. and you're not going to understand on the same level that I understand, because we didn't work through it together. So, you know, things like that made it worth it to me as well.
Well, and you mentioned about how it, because we talk about the like, people say the year-round calendar for the high school sport. There's a little bit of a break with a lot of that, but it's true about collegiately. And it was mm-hmm. funny. I ran into Brian Heath, I remember, over the winter. He was at a game, and I was talking to him, and he had a stellar career at Division II Michigan Tech. I mean, a brilliant career. And I said, "You're going to miss it." And it was funny. He said, "You know, I'm going to miss the games competing. But, man," he said, "the year-round stuff, I don't know if I'm going to miss that that much." And I think that's the issue is, yeah, you love the 4 year, the people that make it, they love the 4 year experience, but bottom line, end all be all, it's the competition part of getting ready for, you know, playing.
And it's funny that he said that, because I totally get where he's coming from. Is that, man, when my college career came to an end, I was sad. You know, there was so much about it.
48 months.
Yeah, there's so much about it that I was gonna miss, and I do miss, but it was also time.
but I think the other thing here, we're talking about most kids that I've been here since 1990 that I think of, you know, that go on to play at the next level. You know, I think about D1 kids, you know, and I, you know, okay, Liz Furlong, Watkins, played at Iowa. Mm-hmm. Dyson Blazer played baseball at Iowa, and Ethan Happ. There's just not a lot of D1 kids. They're the exception that play at that level. So most kids are playing D2 or D3, junior college or whatever. But the big issue in all, so what I say, long story short, then with the kids is, even, you know, if you want to play at the next level, your primary focus is school. You have to be a good student, because
right.
they ain't gonna mess with you.
Right.
If you, am I right on that? If
yeah.
you want to play at the Division III level or even the JUCO level, which I know academic requirements are a little bit different. Most coaches don't want to worry about a kid if he can make it in the classroom mm-hmm. or not, especially a kid that's coming from a small rural school. So from a parental standpoint, you know, all the kids that play travel sports, bottom line is they still better be excelling in the classroom or they're not going to play at the next level, because most coaching staffs will not take a chance on that type of kid.
Right, and that's, you know, I've had a couple kids come through the girls' basketball program who, you know, have had the opportunity to play at the next level. And that's always my advice to them and what I would tell their parents, you know, if I talk to their parents too, is you need to pick a school for the school. And then, you know, sport comes second, because there could be any one of 10 million reasons why, you know, that sport's not going to work out, whether it's for any reason we've talked about today. God forbid an injury happens and it ends your career. You don't want to be at the school and be unhappy just because you don't have that sport anymore. And I would also say, too, to that, that I think a lot of people, this is my own, like, opinion and perception, I think a lot of people get far too caught up in thinking, you know, if I have the ability to play at the next level, they get way too caught up in, oh, but I want to go D3, but no, I'm going to go D2 because that sounds better. Like D1, D2, D3, JUCO, maybe you go NAIA, which is a school like St. Ambrose. Like, it doesn't matter, because it has to be the right fit for you. You know, and like for basketball specifically, like, kind of the beauty of the college game is you get a coach in there, and the difference of the college game to high school game is, you know, as high school coaches, we get the athletes we get. We're not recruiting them, so, you know, whatever system I run has to be tailored to the athletes that I have. Whereas at college, those coaches, they have a specific way they want to play the game, a specific system they want to run, so they're going to recruit kids to fit that. So while, you know, you might be a high school student and have the ability to play at that next level, you might be a terrible fit for that particular program. And I think a lot of people don't think that through. But then what's also been interesting on that same note is that as a high school coach now, I've had a lot of conversations with college coaches. And you're right, when they call, the first questions they ask have nothing to do with the kid's skill or ability level on the court. It's what kind of a student are they? What's their character like? How do they handle when things are going great? How do they handle when they're not going great? And the most interesting question, excuse me, is they always ask those same questions about the family.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make, you know, because, you know, if they're trying to recruit Jim Taylor out of my program, but if you're going to bring any kind of negative energy to their program, it's cool, because they have five other Jim Taylors that they have. They got five other Jim Taylors that they can bring into their program that won't. So, you know, it's a family ordeal. So
yeah,
it's just been a really cool experience having those conversations with the college coaches.
And I guess the eye-opening experience for me, if the kids or the parents can watch a practice at the next level. I remember it was a couple years ago I went to the media day they had at Wisconsin, and they let you watch a practice. And I remember I told Hap, I said, dude, it's awesome watching you play on Wednesday night on the Big Ten Network or ESPN. Dude, I don't want any part of the watching this practice. I mean, you watch that. And then even, like, behind the scenes when I went to some of those games, and I was at a game this year, I went up to see him play at Minnesota, and I was waiting after the game, and some of the Minnesota kids were leaving. And, you know, they're on campus, and basically the game gets over. So they have the book bag over their shoulder, and they're walking out of Williams Arena, and they're, you know, walk into their dorm
mm-hmm.
with their book bag like they got schoolwork. And I'm like, that's the stuff behind the scenes. That's not the glam life. And,
oh, yeah.
And 99.9% of it is not the glam life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the stuff that goes on behind the scenes for a lot of the student athletes, whatever level you play at.
Yeah.
And I know there's this false sense we get with some of these programs. I mean, even the elite, you can talk about the elite level at D1. Maybe some of those kids maybe do get breaks that we don't know about. But 90% of those kids, they have to be good students. Like you said, mm-hmm. even at the D3 level, you have to show up to practice. You have to compete every day. And if you don't, your days are going to be numbered. And I think people don't get that at all levels.
Right. And you can say, like, you can say you get it all you want, but until that athlete's there and that responsibility is now placed upon them and it's real, you can't understand just how much it is.
All right. Talking with Kate Engwall, our time is winding fast toward the 10 o'clock hour. John Hoscheid is hopping across the street. He's broadcasting from Farm and Home, Huffman's Farm and Home today. Also a big day today in Alita. We have a ribbon-cutting ceremony at 11 o'clock this morning for the new library. But more coming up with Mercer County girls basketball coach Kate Engwall joining us in studio on 102.3 FM, WRMJ Alito and WRMJ.com.
Rebuilding a home can be expensive. Many homeowners don't realize that their insurance may not provide them with enough coverage to build the same home in the same location. Country Financial is just one of a few insurance companies that offer insurance that covers the replacement cost of your home, even if that amount is higher than the policy limit. Call your Country Financial agent today to find out more about homeowners insurance. Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois. Must qualify for additional replacement cost coverage. Minimum insurance to value required.
Contact your Country Financial representative today. In Alito, see me, Tracy Bigham.
John Waugh.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
And in Moline, see me, Steve Sim.
When you fire up a John Deere 1 Series tractor, you can tackle the job without wrestling the attachments. Hook up everything from a front loader to a drive-over mower deck in no time. Get a 1 Series for just $99 a month at participating John Deere dealers. Nothing runs like a Deere. Run with us. 0% annual percentage rate. For additional cost information, please call toll-free 855-633-2315.
Come visit us at Martin Sullivan in Alito or online at martinsullivan.com. Martin Sullivan, service for generations since 1926.
When you're looking for custom-fit athletic shoes or work boots with that personal service you just don't find anymore, you need to visit 6140 Run. Judy from Illinois City talks about her experience.
Drew was fantastic. I had talked to him via social media, and he told me to bring down an old pair of shoes with me. And I took an old pair down, and Drew was able to put me into a new other brand name shoe, but they fit so good because he looked at it and he knew immediately what to do. He put me in the new shoe, was comfortable from the day there. I walked out in them, and Drew was very, very knowledgeable about his business.
Judy was so pleased. She won't be going to the Quad Cities anymore.
I think Drew in Galesburg was well worth my money. He had a lot more knowledge than the place I've been going to in the Quad Cities, and I'll go back to 6140 Run.
To find that perfect fit, visit 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg.
Buying new is out of the question. The next best option, a quality pre-owned vehicle at a sweet price. But where to start? Progress Park Auto Sales should be first on your list and will probably be the last too once you find yourself in a warranted vehicle from their lot that is just what you were looking for. Did I say warranted? I sure did. Most of their vehicles come with a comprehensive warranty. And if they don't have what you want, they'll find it for you. Open every weekday to serve you. Progress Park Auto Sales, Route 17, Alito.
Back on the WMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning, Kate Engwall with us, the Mercer County varsity girls basketball coach. Again, a reminder, the dates for that camp?
June 26th through the 28th.
An all-sports camp for girls entering 3rd through 6th grade in the Mercer County School District, and the camp based around the Mercer County Intermediate School campus. All right, Lincoln, we talked to you briefly about this. Lincoln Trail Conference is expanding, not next year, but the school year after that. Knoxville and Abingdon-Avon. not really, I don't think a really big deal for the girls basketball program because you've had a non-conference relationship with Knoxville for a long time, and we've played Abingdon Avon for a while in that Rova Cranberry Classic. But I think two nice additions to the league.
Yeah, I think I'm excited for it. Like you said, we've had non-conference relationships with both those teams for years. We always play Knoxville on our schedule, and then we've traditionally played in the Rova Cranberry Classic to tip off the season, and A-Town has been there. And I think that as far as girls basketball is concerned, what those teams bring to the table, they'll fit right into the conference. The A-Town's got a lot of underclassmen, a lot of talent. They're a tough team this year. And then Knoxville's a traditional area powerhouse. So I think they would make the transition and be considered a conference favorite from the start. But two really nice teams that'll give us some good competition through the year.
So that means 12 teams in the league. And those people that are familiar with how the Lincoln Drug Conference tournament works for boys and girls basketball, it's been two pools of five, right?
Mm-hmm.
So have they talked about what the future of the Lincoln Trail Conference boys and girls basketball tournaments will be yet?
You know, I haven't heard any talk about that specifically concerning the addition of those two schools. Every year they talk about potentially changing the format of the tournament. And then especially after this year, we got two games into the girls LTC tournament and they scrapped the whole thing because of the, crazy weather that we had. And then the same thing the next week happened with the boys tournament, but they were able to switch from a pool format to a bracket format in time to salvage the tournament. So I think there would definitely be some consideration of moving to a bracket style tournament with the 12 teams, but I haven't heard anything
for sure. The centralized location. That's the other issue with the years where it's in Biggsville or our Princeville.
It was Princeville this last year, which was brutal.
Because I know the year before I asked the Princeville coach about what do you think the future of the LTC tournament should be. He said, well, they need a centralized location, and it should be bracketed, but don't make the change next year because we're the host.
Yeah. All's good when we hosted the year before, and I had no complaints that year. But then, the next year you go to Princeville, and I was sure singing a different song.
Yeah, so we'll wait and see what happens with that. But, again, that's effective with the 2021 school year, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So that'll be a 12. And who knows what will happen between now and then with a conference affiliation. The other thing I was thinking about, I wanted to ask you, because I haven't really talked a lot of coaches about this yet, but next year, the way the classification works for the four class sports, have you had a chance to digest a lot of that yet, where they've upped it from normally in the four class sports, it was a division of 25%, first 25% smallest schools were class 1A, next 25% 2A, next 25% 3A, next 25% 4A. But now they're changing that percentage where basically 55% there'll be more 1A and 2A schools. So 27.5% are 1A, the next 27.5% are 2A. And I was looking at the classification breakdown. So it goes currently from 564 enrollment for the 2A, 3A cutoff all the way up to 697. So I was thinking about, like Rock Falls definitely will be 2A program now. Macomb will definitely be 2A for the long haul, and we played them non-conference-wise this year. I think beat them early in the season. But then, and I've talked about it a lot at nauseam with the declining enrollment we face in Western Illinois. We've experienced that, but now the public schools in Chicago are declining. So you're seeing really 2A becoming a Chicago public league school classification. You hadn't much time to digest any of that yet?
No, but I have, to the point that you just mentioned, was that the downside for a school like Mercer County is that when it comes time for postseason, maybe not in the regional round, you might not feel it, but going forward, like you said, I think that increased cutoff is going to include a lot of Chicago public schools, so it just takes kind of the competition you're going to face in the postseason to a new level.
Well, and the interesting thing here is the last two state champions in 2A girls basketball are, I think, the maybe the winningest coach in the nation in Dorothy Gators, who coaches at Chicago Marshall mm-hmm. High School. Now, they were a powerhouse, you know, in the old two-class system in 2A. So they've won the state title in 2A girls basketball the last 2 years. And so their enrollment this year, for everybody, their enrollment is 336 currently this year. So the cutoff for 1A, 2A next year is 299. So, and I would assume their enrollment's going to be declining. Mm-hmm. That was their enrollment this school year. So let that sink in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the future competition of what the measuring stick is in 2A or potentially 1A basketball.
That's hard
so,
to
digest. Yeah. I mean, because I know a lot, they talk a lot about it in boys basketball with the Chicago Oars of the world mm-hmm. and Chicago Corliss in 2A this year. And I think Corliss is like 20 some odd students from dropping to 1A. And I don't think Oar is that far. I think Chicago Oar will probably be 1A in terms of enrollment classification. I think you can petition the IHSA to play up a class. But I tell you, man, going from 564 to 697, that has me concerned for a lot of the local schools we cover at the boys and girls level. And I'm not talking just about, this is four-class sports. So we're talking about high school softball. We're talking about high school baseball, girls and boys basketball and volleyball. I mean, those are some, and most of them are north of Interstate 80.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that most of the schools in our area, that's the direction we travel, you know, in the postseason.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. Give it a year or two and see what those postseason results are. And like you said, I do think it'll have, like, in our viewing area or listening area anyway, I think that's where, you know, we'll see some of that biggest impact.
Well, and that's why you're really going to start seeing an adjustment next year in the sectional complexes that mm-hmm. are going to impact us now with a lot of the teams up north that are going to be dropping from 3A to 2A. You know, the other interesting thing I saw this week, and it hasn't happened, but they're doing the Diocese of Peoria is doing the feasibility study on a Catholic high school.
Yeah, I saw your article
Western
on that.
Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if that happens. What type of wild card that's gonna?
Yeah, wild cards are good. Yeah.
And then if that school is created, what conference they gonna play mm-hmm. in? So, just a lot in play here. Well, we're winding down, so again, I want to wrap up by promoting the camp. So, again, how can people get signed up? The easiest way in moving forward and getting as many kids as possible, and even if they haven't played a travel sport or they haven't had any experience at, you know, if they've never played volleyball, maybe they played a lot of softball but no basketball, you know, this is the age where they still can pick it up from third grade, and even if they're going into sixth grade and they've had mm-hmm. no experience, this is where you get a taste of all this stuff.
Yep. Again, that camp, it's going to be June 26th through the 28th, 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. each day. We'll provide lunch for girls in the fall of 2019 going into third through sixth grade. I talked to your youngest, Tegan, the other day, who was scared to sign up because she wasn't sure how competitive it was going to be, and I convinced her that it's going to be fun. You know, our goal is to, it's fundamental. We're just trying to get the girls introduced to it, get them some exposure to each of the different sports. You know, so it's a developmental camp. You know, so if your kids, you know, has any anxiety about that, you know, fear not. It's going to be a fun week. You know, my experience always has been that the kids leave camp with a smile on their face, having a fun week. So we hope to get a really big turnout to sign your child up. All you need to do is shoot a message to either the Mercer County Girls Basketball or Mercer County Girls Softball. Send us a message via Facebook or a direct message on Twitter. Just give us your child's name, shirt size, and what grade they're heading into, and we'll get them signed up.
The date again is?
June 26th through the 28th.
And that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Or
I think it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
All right. Well, we appreciate Coach Engwall stopping in and talking with us this morning, and we'll be shooting hoops before you know it in mid-November. And one thing we didn't mention, Eagles going from Rova Cranberry to Ridgewood next
year.
Is that a JV tournament, too? They do JV, or is that just a varsity?
No, just a varsity.
All right. So that'll be here before you know it, middle of November. Kate Engwall in the WRMJ studios with us. We'll take a break. More on Sportsline.